Welcome to Focus on the Community, produced by the DLC Media News Center. I'm Dave Crooks. Today, my special guests are Clay County Sheriff Paul Harden and Chief Deputy Josh Clark. On today's program, we'll discuss a new jail expansion being proposed in Brazil. We will also focus on the unique agreement between Clay County and the United States Marshals Service for holding immigration and customs enforcements, known as ICE detainees. Gentlemen, welcome to Focus on the Community.
Thank you very much for having us today, Dave.
Yes, glad to see you.
At this week's Clay County Commissioners and Council meeting during the public comments portion, there was a young lady that showed up from South Bend. I believe her name was Ramilia Solano, and I think she represents a group called Communities Not Cages Indiana Coalition. She addressed our local officials in both the meetings, and she was pleading with our officials to drop the contract with the U.S. Marshals Service, which allows the local jail to hold ICE detainees. And she made several claims about jail conditions, and many of her claims were refuted by both commissioners and council members. As you guys know, I did a Facebook Live broadcast of both meetings, and I attended the commissioners' meeting and noticed you were both in attendance. So I appreciate you both taking time out of your schedule to maybe clarify and answer some questions today about the jail expansion and some of these charges this young lady was making. First of all, where is she coming up with these bad conditions or failed inspections that supposedly happened last summer? Is there any truth to that? Who wants to tackle that one?
Sure. We have every year inspections by the ICE or by the Department of Homeland Security. They hire a company, normally Nakamoto, which is an independent company, and they come in to facilities that are holding detainees to check on the conditions and work with the regulations that are supplied to us by immigration and what we have to do. And so we go through these. There's also another one called the Office of Detention Oversight. And we go through an inspection with those, with that organization every year also. And what this is a way to keep us sharp on policies that they have and to make sure that we are housing people in the recommended ways. We have fallen short on a few of the standards that they had. And in those, they contact us. They work with us to improve it, to correct the standards. And then once we show that we have corrected the standards, then we move on.
Can you give an example of maybe some of the deficiencies that maybe they found or pointed out needed to be improved on here in the community at the jail?
Josh, why don't you?
Well, and I want to go back maybe and hit. Indiana has a state standard on how jails should be operated. And the federal standard is a lot higher. And the sheriff and I, as well as our employees, we encourage those federal audits to come in. And what those audits do is it makes us better as employees. It makes our jail better because now we're operating at a higher standard. So we embrace them to come in. And if they came in and did an audit and said nothing was wrong, that would give us a false sense of happiness, right? I mean, we would think that we're perfect, and we're not. And that's what, when these groups come in and they find these deficiencies, they're adding light to what we should be doing better. And one of the things is our jail was built with just that in mind, a jail, and those jail standards say based on the state standards. And one of the deficiencies they hit us on every year is the number of toilets. Well, we're not going to have three toilets in one small cell. That's just not how the buildings are configured. And so they say we have to have multiple toilets per four people in one block. So that's one that we can't just go in and put new toilets into the current facility. So as we design and go through with this new building plan, having the insight from these audits allows us to build a facility that can better meet those standards. And we're also working under a 2008 standard, which is an extremely old standard. And once we get potentially the new facility, we can bump up to a 2019 or 22 standard, whichever they have at that time. But a lot of the other thing is just policies, keeping up to date. And we try to create our policies with current standards when in reality they're looking at it from a 2008 perspective. And so when we don't have the proper paperwork or the paperwork that they're looking for, to match their records, it causes some confusion and some turmoil sometimes. But like the sheriff said, they work with us to create the proper policy to ensure that we are doing everything accordance to their wishes.
So she referred to the recent lawsuit, which, by the way, was dismissed or at least withdrawn by the complainants. But it was not only the group that she was part of, but this Mariposa, I think, is that the right way to pronounce it?
Mariposa Legal.
Yeah. And I guess they've been kind of, you know, scrutinizing, I guess, the arrangement you do have with the Marshal Service, claiming there wasn't enough transparency on this actual jail plan, which, by the way, there's not been an official plan rolled out. There is a jail committee, is the way I understand it, and they're getting close for the commissioners to announce some kind of a meeting. And I keep hearing this term, the BOT agreement. What does BOT stand for, Sheriff?
BOT stands for buy on transfer.
Okay. So basically, there's going to be a meeting, if I understood what the commissioners and the council members said earlier this week. Within the next month or two, there's going to be an official meeting that would roll out the plans for the expansion. Can you elaborate on why we need the expansion? And is it just for the ICE detainees, or is there really a need for an expansion with even your local offenders, I guess is the right word?
Well, you know, you have to understand, we have to project to the future. And when we built the Justice Center that we have now, we moved from a jail that was really built to house approximately 48 prisoners. And when we moved over, I think we were housing somewhere between 60 and 70, if I'm not mistaken. And since then, you know, right now we have approximately 100 to 115 local prisoners in our jail right now.
So almost double.
Almost double. And then with the, you know, I hate to blame COVID, but with the onset of COVID, a lot of the offenders that went before the courts have been placed on house arrest, have been put on other forms of detention rather than placing them in jail. The courts have done their best to try to hold down a number of some of the offenders that they put in our jail.
That they're trying to keep them from going to Putnamville or Branchville or places like that. Is that a true statement?
Well, that has been done by a legislator from a few years ago when they said that the prison population had gone up, and so it was decided that a county jail should hold a level 6 felony offender at the county jail rather than send them to the Department of Corrections.
One way to keep from building more prisons, I guess.
One way to keep from building more prisons and hiring more state employees, and now they put the financial burden on the counties. And the county jails were not designed by statute to be a correctional facility for long term. We are built as short term pre sentencing. We hold them for the courts until they're sentenced, and then they are to be sent on to the state prison, or if it's a misdemeanor violation, you know, a low level violation, then we hold them for a short period of time. But now the law was changed, so now we hold some of these level 6 offenders for longer periods of time, and then that gives us the responsibility of having to provide more programming for them, which they should get in the state prisons for, changing their behaviors and these behavior modification programs. And your local jails weren't designed to put on a lot of these programs that we now have to try to get scheduled in.
So how many inmates, you mentioned an average daily count of 100 to 115, if I heard you correctly. How many more do we have that are actually ICE detainees that you're holding for the Marshal Service?
We normally hold 50 to 55. I have an agreement to hold up to 65.
And then usually those detainees are held how long?
It all depends. Normally 15 days, maybe longer. And then they're moved to another facility or they are deported, one or the other. We have several that will bond out. They contact the immigration office in Indianapolis. They They go through their attorneys and go through the federal courts, immigration courts, and, you know, we're told to go ahead and release them on bond. Their bond is paid in Indianapolis. And once that's done, then we go ahead and send them out the door. And that's fine. You know, it's happening more and more all the time.
So you're talking about the ICE detainees.
Could
be released from your jail here, and they're on their own, basically.
Yes. Well, what happens then, when they get notified from their attorney that their bond is being posted, they make a call to family members to come over here to Brazil, Indiana, and pick them up and take them back to wherever they go.
And they may go who knows where, right?
Oh, right, right.
And again, are these always undocumented people that ICE is holding, or are they actually citizens? I mean, how would you describe it?
They're undocumented.
They're undocumented. Okay.
We get them because they have been arrested somewhere, normally in the state of Indiana, although we are picking them up from other states now. But normally they have been arrested for a local violation, and it could be anything. It could be driving under the influence. It could be a murder charge. But they have been arrested by usually local departments, placed in jail locally somewhere. And then when it's found that they do not have documentation, either through Social Security number, A number, something like this, then the immigration customs enforcement is contacted. And they pick them up to be prosecuted then through the federal courts, federal immigration courts. Sometimes, depending on the charge, they may also be prosecuted locally for criminal violations. And then once that's cleared up, either through being found not guilty or serving their time, then a hold is placed on them for the ICE to pick up. And then they're seen on their no documentation at that point.
Chief, let me ask you this. Whether it's a local offender or even some of these ICE detainees, if the average person who lives here wants to go into the website at the county government that you have, can you find out who's actually in the jail? And if so, can you find out what their violation has been or what their charges are against them, whether it's a local offense or the ICE detainees?
So we have a jail reporting system called Jail Tracker. And with Jail Tracker, we've received a web page. Now, when you get the web browser and you actually click into it, it doesn't look like your normal website per se. And it's blank, but it comes up with a Jail Tracker logo on there. And you can actually search all of our inmates. Now, the difference is, because we generally don't have all the details for the ICE, their stuff is limited. So it'll give their name, you know, some of their information, but it's not going to give their charges. It won't give their specific bond because we generally don't take care of their bond. Their bond has to be met, like the sheriff said, in Indianapolis or one of the federal locations. But yeah, we can check any local inmates you want through that system. And so maybe we'll provide that to you. Maybe you can put it on your website or provide it to the listeners.
We'd be happy to do that. Now, when there's ICE detainees held in Clay County, I mean, how would you describe, I guess, the offenses from, like, the sheriff mentioned a moment ago, it may have been a driving while intoxicated offense, but how bad are the offenses, I guess, from low to very serious felonies and so forth?
Well, that's just it. There's a wide variety of charges, and we have had some from the sexual crimes to murder charges to drug trafficking. We just had one this past week where two individuals were stopped on the interstate with multiple pounds of methamphetamine. As a result of that traffic stop, the ICE and immigration put a detainer on the individuals. So once they're done with their charges in the regards to the drugs and the trafficking, they'll have to answer to the immigration aspect. So these charges come and these holds come even at a local level.
I've noticed that our state to the west, Illinois, they're not holding ICE detainees anymore. I guess that was the decision by their governor and perhaps their legislature. Any idea what might be the negatives or the pros and cons about holding ICE detainees, good or bad? I mean, have you found any unique problems holding these prisoners in our jail?
No, there's no unique problems with them. You know, I've always taken the policy that if a law enforcement agency needs assistance, we're going to try to help them. And, you know, before I was sheriff, the previous administration had already worked out an agreement to hold these ICE detainees. And, you know, I see it as a good relationship between us and the federal government to help out on this. They took a stand over there that they were not going to hold or allow their county jails to hold the immigration holds. So far in the state of Indiana, we don't see a problem with that. You know, like I've said, you know, most of these people have been arrested for one offense or another, and that's why we end up with them. You know, we pick up several at both the federal and state prisons after they have served their sentence to either the federal government or the state. Immigration still has a hold on them because they are here illegally. So we pick them up there, bring them to our facility and to Indianapolis to go through the initial hearing, which is done in Indianapolis federal court on a lot of the charges. And then we hold them until the courts make a determination. So most everyone I've seen, there has been only one or two that I've ever seen held in our facility that were only picked up because they were undocumented.
Now, as I listen to both the council members and the commissioners talk about this at times during the public comment section or whenever there's reference to the proposed jail coming up, there's apparently some financial incentives to hold these ICE detainees. They pay a higher rate than the state. I guess, Josh, the state pays what for a prisoner to be held here? Is it like $35 or something like that a day?
They actually just bumped that up. It was $2 roughly. They bumped it up. And so it's, again, it's a very low amount. And yes, the contract we have through the marshals is higher, and we do receive more benefits, which allows us to better care for those detainees and again, have better staff and more more luxuries there at the facility for them.
Okay, so
it's also misrepresented on this. We do get paid more. That money is to be used for the care of detainees. So what we do, that money then is placed into our jail budget, and it offsets tax dollars. You know, people keep saying that we're using that money for, you know, things that it's not supposed to be used for. No, that money is used for our jail budget. You know, local inmates benefit also, but you know, there are bills that have to be paid to keep the detainees in. So that money is used in our jail budget, which offsets county tax dollars.
So there is a spread, so to speak, once the marshal's office pay you that daily rate, even after you feed them three meals a day, provide medical care that occasionally is needed, you're saying that a Clay County taxpayer will typically pay less to operate that jail because of these extra funds that the U.S. Marshal Service is providing. Is that an accurate statement?
That's an accurate statement.
Okay. So what's the downside? There's no downside in your view, I take it, on holding these ICE detainees, it sounds like to me.
No, I don't see it as a downside. You know, the money's there. We have had to hire maybe a couple more employees because our numbers have gone up. But you can normally, by, you know, separating the prisoners and detainees back there, you can handle them with very few correctional officers. And so we have had to hire a couple. But there's very little downside to it.
So there was an article that was published earlier this week. I think one of the sources I found was Axios, but they're claiming that the current administration, the president, is trying to find a way to have less holds on these ICE detainees. Do you think that could be a problem in the next couple of years, if that even happens, to where there might be less of a need, and that might also play havoc with the design for an expansion of the local jail?
I think maybe I'll hit on that, and, sure. And this goes back to articulate what the sheriff was saying earlier. We're a pre-trial or pre-sentence detention facility for locals and for the federal side. A lot of these detainees aren't actually convicted of anything yet because they've been arrested and charged, but they're not going to go to federal prison for something that they haven't been convicted of yet. And so there may be changes that are made from a national level, and that's perfectly fine. But what we are seeing across the board, whether it's local or federal or ICE detainees, people are committing crimes. And that is going to continue. And as a result of that, they're going to need a place to put them. Because, again, they're not going to put them in federal prisons right away because they may not be guilty. Again, this is a pretrial holding facility and a holding pattern that we provide the service for the federal government. So I don't know that what they will do that will impact us at all, for that matter, because unfortunately, crime will not disappear.
So that's true. It just seems like there's always people making bad choices in life, and that makes your job a little more difficult every day. But I guess when you look at these out-of-town groups that keep coming in here to criticize the fact that you've got this contract to begin with, some of their comments even kind of blow me away to where, like, you just want to set them free or put an ankle bracelet on them. I don't know how effective that would be, but tell the community why that's maybe not in their best interest to just turn them loose, I guess, more frequently.
You know, and I don't think we can specify or answer why all the detainees are there. And I think there may be circumstances that some could get out earlier, but they all have the opportunity to bond from our knowledge. So if they can get out on their own, then that would be fine. But when you release a violent offender into the streets, you're only potentially allowing that offender to do something else. And I think that's what we have to be extremely cautious of is finding the reason of why we're releasing these detainees or local inmates. The rehabilitation, we're all for that. And I think from our perspective here in Clay County, we want to have that good working relationship with the federal government. We want to provide them with a location, a safe haven, whether they're local or federal detainees. And building this facility is going to give us the opportunity to provide a safe place for them. We want to do the best. And we talked earlier about the audits. That makes us a better location and gives them that safe haven. And there have been allegations of how deplorable our jail is and how our staff does this, that, and the other. And that's unfortunate because that's the last thing we want is to provide a bad environment for them. And honestly, for the most part, our detainees are some of our better inmates. They don't give us a whole lot of trouble, and we're very fortunate for that.
And if the new jail is approved and the expansion occurs, give a quick example on what will be better or different that might meet the federal standards.
Well, I think one of the things we can do is we can actually separate more the ICE compared to local. And in doing that, we can have specific employees that are ICE driven. And in doing that, then you're having a better knowledge of the policies, the rules, the regulations. And so we can operate in a more efficient manner that will do us better for our audits and again, make a better environment for the detainees to stay.
And do you have interpreters at the jail to help you with the second language detainees?
We do have staff members that are fluent in language, but the problem with that is we don't have detainees just from one geographic location. So we have them from all over the world. And with you know, how many languages are there?
Yeah.
We don't have a specific translator for every single person, but we have programs and so forth that can assist us with that. The technology these days helps.
Couple of minutes left, guys. Can you think anything else that the community should know about the current arrangement and why this expansion is about to be considered?
Well, I think that we can see possible jobs for people. It brings income into the community. You know, I hate it that there are some who think that it brings bad views of the community, but I don't see it as a bad thing for the community. I see it as jobs and expansion.
Okay. Josh, anything you want to add?
Oh, I think the sheriff just hit the nail on the head there.
Okay. And then I know this was talked about on the program last weekend by a reporter out of Indianapolis, but he pointed out that COVID has had an impact on crime rates lately, and it's a combination of people being perhaps in their homes more frequently and the motions get stirred up and people make some poor choices, and all of a sudden you've got the cops showing up to take someone to jail because of physical abuse or whatever. But it's also, I think, a secondary problem. Perhaps we are letting some people loose quicker that maybe should be staying in jail, and they are committing additional offenses, and then we've got all this increased crime on the street. Are those both accurate statements in your view?
Those could sure be accurate. I hate to, you know, that I hate to throw blame at some other agency, but at times it can happen that way. Yes,
okay. I definitely think we see the recidivism rate that's higher than it should be, and I think that's just going to be a matter of us working with the state and local legislators to ensure that we can do what's best for the community, especially of our size.
And if you're a Clay County resident waiting to see the exact details and proposal, you guys get any insight on the timing on when this bot meeting might take place?
No, I don't. Really, I don't.
It's up to the commissioners. Is that right?
Right. It's up to the commissioners and council. They're the ones that are actually the ones that build the jails.
And I keep encouraging both the county council members and the commissioners that if you'll advertise the date way ahead of schedule, which I think they're all willing to do, and I think that was even part of the agreement why this lawsuit that was recently filed was withdrawn and dismissed. But we obviously want the public to know every detail and give them a chance to hear the presentation and to give public feedback so that they do have hopefully a positive feeling why we're making this investment in the expansion. So I guess we'll wait and see when that proposed date is. But judging by what I saw this week at both meetings, it sounds like we're less than a month or two away from hearing what that date might be and getting more details.
That's probably true. Like I said, that's in the commissioner's realm of when they call for a meeting or decide that we're ready for a meeting such as that. And they and the council are the ruling bodies that take care of that.
Okay. Well, guys, thanks for taking time out of your schedule to at least share some insights on this. And I'm sure we'll be talking more about this when the public meeting occurs. And thanks for all you do for protecting our community.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much, Dave.
This has been Focus on the Community for the weekend of February 13th, 2022, produced by the DLC Media News Center. For a download of this show and other past programs, you can visit any one of our radio station websites. We want to thank Sheriff Paul Harden of Clay County and Josh Clark, his chief deputy, for appearing on today's program. I'm Dave Crooks. Thanks for listening.